Good morning. Today's daf in Yevamos Yud Zayin. We're on to Zayin Amud Beis. We're towards the bottom of the Amud, actually two wide lines down. We are going to this morning finish the first parak of the Masechta. Yetz Hashem, we're going to begin the second parak. So here at the towards the end of the first parak, so we are dealing with a fundamental issue in terms of coexistence between the Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, the students of Shammai, the students of Hillel, who had machloksim throughout Shas. We already mentioned this in Chagiga. Chagiga really is one of the epicenters of Gemaras in which discusses this this issue in terms of when did machlokas really take root? When there was a real division amongst Chachmei Yisrael in terms of positions? So the Gemara in Chagiga tells us that up until the point of Shammai and Hillel, there was very little machlokas. In fact, the Gemara says that there was really one machlokas of whether to do smicha on a carbon or not do smicha on a carbon on Yontif. But after that, Shammai and Hillel argued themselves, meaning the principals, the Rebbeim, they argued themselves, but on a handful of halachas. And then the Talmidei Shammai and the Talmidei Hillel, otherwise known to us as Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, that's when things really fell apart. That's when there was real machlokas. That schism, that machlokas, the Tosus there in Chagiga quotes the Yerushalmi, and the Yerushalmi says it's a function of the fact that they were not mishamish there the Rebbeim sufficiently. Whatever the case is, that's really where you could put a pin right at that point in Jewish history, and that's really where machlokas proliferated. The issue that we've been discussing now for 3 days, dapim of Yudalin, Tezvav, Tezayin, is how do they coexist, and especially when they argue about things that are fundamental, about ishus, about marriage, and what marriages are legal and which marriages are illegal. And illegal marriages result in, under certain circumstances, mamzerus. So how do they coexist? So the answer is they coexist, and more than coexist. In other words, it's not just coexistence. There's a real achdus. There's a real unity amongst them. But it's difficult. It's challenging. And there has to be we learned this in the Gemara, there has to be communication between the parties in terms of what's his yichus, what's her yichus, et cetera, but it works. It does work out. So that's what we've been discussing now for the last 3 days. And in fact, it came to a head a number of times, but in yesterday's daf on Tetzayin Amud Aleph, so we learned how it came to a head, as there was rumors going around that Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus was paskin like Beit Shammai. Now, those are the rumors that were circulated. And so what they did is they paid him a visit. And when I say they, so we're describing Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And now, keep in mind, by the way, where are we in terms of Tkufa? We are now after Churban Bayis Sheni, and there are still people who are paskin like Beit Shammai. So at that point in time, they paid him a visit, right? They really wanted a more uniform position amongst Klal Yisrael, and the Basco came out and said the halacha is like Beit Hillel. The Beit Hillel is the Rov. Anyway, they wanted a more uniform position, so they paid the Rav Dorsa ben Hyrcanus a visit. So Rav Dorsa ben Hyrcanus, yesterday's daf on the Amud Aleph, so most of the Amud Aleph is dedicated to the visit that was paid by these Tanaim to Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus. So as we learned in yesterday's daf, Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus was not the one who was a loyalist to Shitas Beit Shammai. It was actually a brother of his, and by his admission, a difficult brother. But it was a brother of his. But anyway, he said yesterday's daf, I got three things I'm going to tell you as I have a tradition from Chagai Hanavi. So number one, Saras Abbas Asura, that the co-wife of a daughter is going to be Asura, meaning like Beis Hillel. Okay, good. So that is going a tradition taking us all the way back to Chagai Navi and two other things as well. Amun Amov, what do we do with those territories? Ma'asrin, Ma'isar Ani B'Shviya. So in the Shemitah year, so those lands which are not invested with the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael are therefore going to be left, I'm going to say vacant, but not vacant, meaning available, that's better, available so that all the crops that grow in that year during the Shemitah year could be forwarded towards the poor people. And finally, Mekabim Gerim and Karduyim and Tarmudim, and you can accept converts from Karduyim and Tarmudim. And that's really what we're going to be picking up on now for the remainder of today's daf. That last statement that he made as a tradition from Chagai Hanavi, that there are certain areas where you're allowed to accept converts. Why wouldn't you be allowed to accept converts from them? Hold that thought, because we're going to be explaining that. Well, we explained it a little bit in yesterday's daf. That part's true. But we're going to explain a little bit more in today's daf as well. In the meantime, however, we're picking it up where we left off yesterday. And that is Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmini. So yesterday, as part of the exchange, we quoted the pasuk in Tehillim. The pasuk we're all familiar with, Narayisi Gam Zakanti, V'lo Reisi Tzadik Nezav. So it came as part of the exchange between Rabbi Dos Ben Horkanus and the Tanaim. Notably, yesterday's daf, it was addressed to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, meaning when Rabbi Dos Ben Horkanus heard that Azariah had a child, so he was amazed. Wow, I didn't expect that to happen. Okay, anyway. So, Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Amar Rabbi Yerushalmi Patzik Zeh, Sar HaOlam Amru. Who's the author of that statement? Who made that statement? Meaning David wrote it down, and David obviously wrote it down with Ruach HaKodesh, but who is he citing when he says Nar HaYisi? So, according to Rabbi Yerushalmi, Sar HaOlam said it. Sar HaOlam, who's Sar HaOlam? So Rashi just simply writes it's a Malach. Okay. Tosfos over here deliberates this a little bit more in terms of specifically which Malach. Anyway, we could just simply say it's a malach. How did he arrive at that conclusion? The Gemara goes on to explain. Nar Hayisi, sorry, we did that. So, Sar Olam Amru. The Nar Hayisi Gam Zakanti, Man Amre, Ile Mekucha Brichu, can't be Kosh Baruch Hu Mika Zikne Kameh. In other words, there's no age by Kosh Baruch Hu. Ve'ela David Amre. So the Gemara says, what? David said, Mi Kashish Kole Hai. David Amalach wasn't that old. Now, granted, he lived to 70 years of age, which is good. Now, the Pasuk in Tehillim says, by 70, that's already Zikna. So that's pretty good. But the Gemara says, yeah, but if you consider the Pasuk, Nar Yisi Gam Zakanti, Lo Re'isi Tzadik Nezav. I never saw Tzadik, that was forsaken. Meaning, I've been around for a really long time, and that's not a description of David HaMelech. Meaning, David HaMelech has seen a lot in his 70 years, but the Pasuk, you get the impression from the Pasuk that we're talking about generational. So, Elo Shema Minas, Sar Olam Amr, so therefore it's a Malach who said it. The beginning of Eicha, towards the beginning of Megillas Eicha. So the enemies went after the Machmadim. So what are the Machmadim? So those are treasured items. So Ze Amon Moav. So the Gemara says it's a reference to Amon Moav. Vishar Shenichnasu Avdi Kocham Lehechal Hakol Nifnu Al Kesef Vizahav. So when all the other enemies came into Yerushalayim to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, so most of the enemies went right after the gold and silver, meaning they plundered, they took spoils. However, Haim, but those who came from Ammon and Moab, Nifnu al Sefer Torah, they went after the Sefer Torah. Now, there are many Sefer Torah, but as we described a number of times, there really is one Sefer Torah, which is used to authenticate all the other Sefer Torah, right? It's kept in the Beis HaMikdash, possibly kept in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, possibly kept in the Aron. Regardless, in other words, it was a master Sefer Torah, if you will. So they went after it. Amru zeh shekasuv bo, lo yavo amoni moavi bekal Hashem. So obviously what bothered them is that in the Torah itself it says that they're not allowed to go and become part of the Jewish people. Now just to be clear, by the way, they are in fact allowed to convert. What they can't do, however, is that they're Psule Kahal, they can't marry into the Jewish people. But anyway, obviously, it is, they found it to be offensive. So, Yisarev Be'esh, so therefore they felt that the Torah should be burned. So, Tziv Hashem, I'm sorry, period. Okay. And now, as long as we are interpreting Psukim and Eicha, so the Gemara is going to do one more. And Tziv Hashem Le'Yakov, Svivav Tzarav. So, Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded Yaakov, who's surrounded by enemies. Am Rav Kagon, Hum Naila Fum Nahara. So, Rav just simply gives an example of what this means, that you have a Jewish community being surrounded by enemies. Okay, Adkan. Okay, really, that took us to the end of yesterday's daf. We're on to Zayin Amud Beis. We're towards the bottom of the Amud. And here we're going to talk about Yichus. Okay. The main place in Shas that we're going to be discussing Yichus is going to be in the fourth parak of Kedushin. So when we get to the fourth parak of Kedushin, we're really going to be speaking about Yichus in detail. Okay, Yichus is a challenging topic in terms of establishing Yichus, in terms of what is Yichus. But the simple way what we're going to present it this morning, which in Kedushin it's not simple. There are 10 classes, if you will, in the fourth parak of Kedushin, and who can marry which class can marry which within which class. It is a challenging topic. Unfortunately, with the recent loss of Rav Chaim Kanievsky, so we were just looking over his yichus is unbelievable. Meaning, in terms of who his father was, his uncle was, on his mother's side was a descendant from Aryeh Levin. Anyway, that yichus obviously is talking about just having prominent people in the family. We're speaking about yichus in terms of whether or not there are any psulim in the family. So the so we are going to be discussing now that when you have certain Jewish communities where their origins are questionable in terms of was there an intermarriage between Jew and non-Jew? What do we say regarding the community at large? Okay, these are tough sugyas. Even just to read the Gemara is going to be a little bit challenging. So forgiveness, please, if I get a little bit wrong over here, but it's just hard. It's a hard Gemara. So I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm a Rav Asi. Okay, Ove Kochav Shekidish Bezman Azeh Choshen LeKedushin. Shem Me Meyaseres HaShvatim Hu. Okay, so we start off with Rav Yehuda quoting Rav Asi. Now, remember those names, because later in this sugya, we are going to come back and we're going to note that the Gemara is going to turn on this position. But anyway, so Rav Yehuda is quoting Rav Asi, and he makes a statement which is really difficult to digest. Let's say a non-Jew is Mekadish a woman Bizman Azeh. Bizman Azeh, obviously, at the time of the writing of the Gemara. So, but still, the point is that normally what would we do? We would shrug our shoulders. Because there is no Kedushin between a Jew and a non-Jew. It simply doesn't take hold. In other words, Kedushin is only between Jew and Jew. So we normally would say, okay, nothing happened. In other words, he gave her money, she accepted the money, they're not married. It's nothing. However, he says, no, it's not nothing. Choshishin, we're going to be concerned. In other words, we're not going to go so far as to say that they're married, but in terms of yichus, in terms of lineage, so he, the chassan, may be a product of the Aseres HaShvatim, which were removed from Eretz Yisrael. And again, crash course history lesson, we've gone over this numerous times, during Bais Rishon, so Sancheir of Melch Asher, so knocked out the 10 northern tribes. It was in the middle of Bais Rishon, a little bit closer to the end of Bais Rishon. Anyway, regardless, so he knocked it out and wanted also to knock out the southern part of Eretz Yisrael as well. A miracle happened. At the time, the Melch Yehuda was Chizkiyahu, and a miracle occurs, and Yehuda is saved. But anyway, the 10 northern tribes were destroyed. Now, what did he do? He annihilated the 10 northern tribes? No, he didn't annihilate them. He sent them into exile, and he sent them out throughout the world. Where are they? That's a great question. Unclear. But anyway, but if a non-Jew were to perform Kedushin on a woman, on a Jewish woman, so because of our lack of knowledge of where the ten lost tribes are, and this non-Jew may be a product of that, of one of the 10 lost tribes. So in other words, he may be Jewish. So therefore, choshen l'kedushin. Shema me'aseres hashvatim hu. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. The likelihood is what? Strong? Not strong? It's not strong. Likelihood is very small. And generally speaking, whenever we're talking about concerns, so we follow the majority. And that's exactly the Gemara's question. Called the parish, Meiruba parish. So the Gemara says, okay, so, but this is not normally how we're going to treat halacha, meaning we normally follow the majority. And over here, there's a concern, but it's a small concern. It's not a large concern. And okay, so the Gemara says, Beduchta dikvi. So the Gemara says, you're right. So under normal circumstances, if it's Tam a non-Jew and he does Kiddushin, so then we're not going to worry about it at all. We'll just shrug our shoulders. It had no effect whatsoever. But if it's a place where it's kavua, now it's a little bit unclear what the Gemara means by that. I'm going to read Rashi. Last Rashi in our Amud. Beduchta dekviya b'nei aseres hashvatim v'chol kavua kemechza mechza dame. So Rashi just simply says it's a place where we know the aseres hashvatim were sent into. So there must have been a point in time, meaning we now have, I don't want to say no idea. I'll speak personally. I have no idea in terms of where Aseres HaShvatim are located today. And you can name places and I'll listen, but we don't know. So there was a period of time, it's clear, this is the way Rashi's presenting the Gemara. There was a period of time where there were communities, locations, where they had a really good idea that that's where the Aseres HaShvatim went. And so now, if it's a makam kavua, so now it says Rashi, so anything now which is established, so the statistics now go halachically, the halachic statistics is now considered it's mechza mechza, it's 50-50. That's called a bona fide suffix. And Rashi now just takes us to the next lines of the Gemara. So, Nahar gozen vare madai. So here we are looking at Malachim Beis, and we're looking now at the dispersion of the 10 northern tribes, and they were sent to these places. And Chalach Zechilazon and Chabor Zechadayav, as we're on the top of Yitzayim and Aleph. And Nahar goes and Zeginzak. So we're going to take the names as known, as cited in Malachim Beis, and we're just going to translate them to what we know them to be today. And Va'ari Madai Zechamadan V'chavar Zeha. Va'ari La Zenihar V'chavar Zeha. V'chavar Zeha. Chavar Zeha Man, what are the surrounding areas? Amashmol, Kerech, Moshe, Chidche, V'dumkaya. Okay, I know to you and I, these locations don't mean anything, but basically the Gemara now is just simply pointing to this city, that city, this city, that city. That's where you're going to find a collection of the Aseres HaShvatim. Okay, so in the time of the Gemara, this we could say definitively. In the time of the Gemara, they had a much better idea of where the Aseres HaShvatim are, right? And to this day, nowadays, we don't. We have obviously close to zero idea. Okay, but anyway, I'm Rav Yochanan. So, we just learned the pasuk in Malachim Beis, highlighting that there were a number of towns that had collections of Aseres HaShvatim. And Rav Yochanan, that says Vekulan Lipsul. So as far as identifying these towns, that means that anyone who comes from this town is going to be disqualified. Look at Rashi. Ruban Mamzerim Shinitmu. So what we're going to say now is that they are Mamzerim. And they became nitmu. Nitmu over here, it means, doesn't mean defiled. It means that basically there was intermingling. There was intermarriage, and they're going to result in a mamzerim. And let's work with the Girsan Rashi, with the correct Girsan in the Rashi. Benos Aseres HaShvatim Bov Des Kochavim V'Vneim Harein Ki Yisraelim V'Nog Behem Isra Mamzeres V'Hein Lo Nizarim V'Nasuv Zeh Achoso Obito V'Harehim Mamzerim. Now, how do you result in mamzerim? So it is difficult, meaning, and I read the Rashi quickly, but I'll explain it outside. The basic idea over here is as follows, is that we know that we follow the mother in terms of Yiddishkeit, right? Who is a Jew? So the answer is pretty clear. I say pretty clear, meaning the established halacha is very clear, and that is that we follow matrilineal descent. The mother's going to determine whether or not the child is Jewish or not. So, in a scenario in which you had a non-Jew and a Jewish woman, a non-Jewish man and a Jewish woman, and they produce a child, so the child is Jewish. There is an opinion that the child is a mamzer. We don't accept that viewpoint. There is that viewpoint. We don't accept that viewpoint. But as Rashi points out over here, but what ends up happening is that, considering the fact that they don't view themselves as Jewish, so then after that, what ends up happening is that there's a lot of intramarriage. Intramarriage meaning family member to family member. Now, when you have Jews being married who are family members, they're related, that's going to produce a mamzer. Okay, so admittedly, that's a lot of steps to get to communities of mamzerim, but these particular communities, because of the intermarriage and then the intramarriage, because of those two steps, so as a result of that, there's going to be mamzerim. That is Rav Yochanan's view regarding these communities that were highlighted. V'kulan lipsul. Ki amrisakam edishmuel. Okay, so all this now was Rav Yehuda Amarav Asi and the statement to Rav Yochanan. Now, all this was forwarded in front of Shmuel, presented to Shmuel. Amar lei bincha ba min Yisrael eskari bincha ve'in bincha ba min alv eskocham kari bincha ela bina. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. If I have a Jewish mother and a non-Jewish father, the child is Jewish. Conversely, if I have a non-Jewish mother and a Jewish father, the child is not Jewish. So the Gemara says, Vayika Bano. So the Gemara says, okay. So basically what Rav Yochanan is telling us is that, what are you talking about? In other words, what ends up happening is that when the Aseres HaShvatim were sent out, what happened was is that there was a there was only the Jewish men who married non-Jewish women, and they didn't produce Jewish children, meaning the children are not Jewish. So the Gemara asked the obvious question. That's only 50% of the population of the Aseres HaShvatim. Why are you only focusing on the men? Meaning obviously there's women. That's the Gemara's question. Vayika banos, v'am ravina shmamina ben bicha ba, menov v'kocham kar bincha, gemiri debanta daudara, itzteru. So the Gemara says something which is just fascinating, and that is that of that generation, meaning once the ten tribes were sent into exile, so the only ones that were procreating were only the men, not the women. The way Rashi describes it, the women were basically suffering trauma and became akaros. They were unable to produce children. So basically, the ten lost tribes. So the only ones that were procreating were the men, and they were procreating not with Jewish women, but with non-Jewish women. Therefore, the children that result from that are non-Jewish. What about the women? The women just simply didn't procreate from that generation going forward. Okay. So according to Rav Yochanan, it's rather amazing. So Rav Yochanan says that when the Aseres HaShvatim were sent into exile, no Jews were produced as a result of that.
So no mamzerim at all.
And therefore, right. No mamzerim, no Jews. Right. Correct. In other words, the only place you could have mamzerim is only when they're Jews. Correct. Good. So what we really have now is a fundamental debate amongst the Amoraim in terms of whether or not the Aseres HaShvatim actually produced future generations of Jews, I should say. So according to Rav Asi, yes, they did, but that became problematic as they didn't recognize their Jewishness, and then they ended up intramarrying and producing mamzerim. And according to Rav Yochanan, no. Rav Yochanan is of the position that they mamish did not produce any Jewish progeny. And as a result of that, there's simply no concern whatsoever. Meaning if it's a non-Jewish community, it's a non-Jewish community. There may be DNA from Aseres HaShvatim. Yeah, there may be. But there was only male representation, not female representation, and there's no Yiddishkeit. There's no Judaism.
I guess this is why the Rabbanim asking that the Ethiopians had to convert, because they didn't want to consider them Mazir and they considered them non-Jews.
Right. It's right. It's clear from the Gemara over here. It's a great observation. It's clear from the Gemara over here that there's a clear advantage to having no Yiddishkeit than to have Yiddishkeit right. As part of the Yichus, if we don't know the Yichus. So in another version, it was presented to Shmuel again. Same basic idea. Rav Asi made the statement that these communities are Jewish/Mamzerim, and when it was presented to Shmuel, Shmuel said, incorrect. Mamsh they're over the kochavim. Shenemar b'Hashem bagdu ki banim zarim yuladu. The pasuk in Hosea says that they fathered strange children. Strange meaning estranged, meaning not Jewish. Yosef, Rav Yosef, Achor, Rav Kana, Yosef, Rav Kana, Kame, Rav Yehuda, Yosef, Vikamar, Asin, we saw the Avdi Yomatave, Ki Charvu Talmud. When Talmud is destroyed, we're going to make a big Kiddush, lavish Kiddush, with the destruction of Talmud. Now go back to yesterday's daf. Do you recall? So Talmud is a place where, there was questionable lineage of Jews living in Talmud. And when I say questionable, I'm probably being even generous in my description. In other words, I don't want to be so simplistic about it, but it was a bad place. Bad in terms of the people that came from there really had poor yichus. The ha'acharif, the Gemara says, now wait one second. It's destroyed. What do you mean? We're going to make a kiddush when it's destroyed. It is destroyed. So the Gemara says, ha'it tamud havai. Yeah, you're confused. In other words, no. It wasn't Talmud that was destroyed, it was Talmud. Rav Ashi Amar Haina Talmud, Haina Talmud. So the Gemara says no, Rav Ashi says no. Talmud, same thing. But I'm still going to maintain that it was not destroyed. Ach pulehu de michbel. Charv mehai gisa, osim mehai gisa, vicharv mehai gisa, osim mehai gisa. So the community was just almost nearly impossible to destroy. You knocked it out from one side, the other side regenerated. You knocked it from that side, the first side regenerated, meaning that the city is just simply at this point of time, at the writing of the Gemara, just yet to be destroyed. Yosef, Rav Hamnuna, kame de'ula v'ka have b'shmaita. So Rav Hamnuna was sitting in front of Ula, and they were in learning. Amar magavra umagavra. And Ula said, wow, this Rav Hamnuna, he is some Talmud Chacham. He's really impressive. He loved Harpanya Maasya. It just happens to be that he's from Harpanya. So it's unfortunate, meaning he's a tremendous Talmud Chacham, but his yichus, really questionable. But outside of that, fantastic. So now, it's a compliment and an insult all at the same time. It happens. So Ichsif, so he was embarrassed. Now, I don't want to be too laissez-faire about one Amora offending and insulting another Amora. Obviously, there's a Bein Adam L'Chaver aspect as well, but there was also a reality of Yichus. Okay, but anyway, but he was embarrassed. Amarle, Kesef, don't know. Kesef gal galasa lehecha yahavta. So he says, well, let me ask you a question. Where do you pay your tax to? Meaning, right, which community do you belong to? So which, where do you pay your tax to? Amalei lefum nahara. So I'm a registered taxpayer to Fum Nahara. Amalei imke mefum nahara ati. He says, okay, so you're not from Arpanya. You're from Nahara. Unclear over here. Was he just trying to cover up for his embarrassing comment? Certainly unclear over here. Meaning, why should where you pay your taxes going to have any consequence in terms of what your yichus is? And okay, certainly unclear over here. But okay, whatever the case is. Right, he tried to mollify the situation. Okay, fine. So my harpanya. So the Gemara says now this word harpanya. How did it get the name harpanya? Clearly, harpanya is a town of seedy character. So where did it get from? I'm Reb Zera. Har shall call ponim bo. So harpanya is a contraction of the word the mountain where everyone turns to. So ben masisa, meaning that when you have nowhere to go, meaning no one's ready to accept you, and basically so you're a little bit rejected. So you're going to go to, and I'm sorry to say this. So you go to a town of rejects. So the harpanya is such a town. So I know. I said it harshly. So ben masisa tana kosher imakim mishpachto v'shifto nifna l'sham. In a brisa, it's a similar comment, and that is that if you don't know your family and you don't know your shevet, okay, so that's where you're going to go. So amar rabba v'hi amuka mishaol. Rabba says, as far as its depth, it's deeper than Sheol. Sheol is a reference to Gehenna, and this place is lower than Gehenna. Okay, so the Gemara is really speaking in really strong terms. Shenemra miyad Sheol epadeim mimavas egaleim. So as far as Gehenna is concerned, so Akash Baruch Hu promises, I'm going to take you out of Gehenna. However, but as far as these people are disqualified, so there really is no pidyon. There's no salvation for them. Psula darpanya mishum psule demeshum psule demeshum mishum psule de tarmud psule de tarmud mishum avde shlomo. Now the Gemara over here traces where do these rejected community come from? This one comes from this one comes from this, and it all goes back to avde shlomo, the slaves of shlomo. Go back to yesterday's daf. You remember avde shlomo, one of the possible culprits in terms of creating these communities of questionable yichus. V'hainu d'armi inche kabiraba v'kabazuta min gader v'azol l'shaol mishol l'tarmun mitarmun l'meishel meishel l'arpanya. And that's what people say. Hainu d'armi inche. You know the old expression. Okay, the old expressions are really old and they're not used nowadays, but the old expressions of the Gemara is that, you know that old expression and how one rolls into the other. This town of rejects roll into this town of rejects all the way till we get to harpanya. And basically harpanya is the lowest on the totem pole, and basically the rejected of the rejected are found in Harpanya. Okay. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, and now, by the way, go back just for one more moment, go back and process Ula and Rav Hamanuna, where now Ula is learning with Rav Hamanuna. Rav Hamanuna is a really impressive Talmid Chacham, and Ula says, what a shame you're from Harpanya. And like, and now you think about it, you realize, oh, that's a really, That's from a yichus standpoint, that's a real condemnation. Hadron l'chamesh esrei nashim. I know that does not end off the first parak of the Masechta on a particularly high note, but anyway, adkan, that's the end of the first parak of the Masechta, and now we go back to Yibum, and we go back to Yavamos. So what did we learn in the first Mishnah on the first parak of the Masechta? So that there are 15 arayas, there are more than 15 arayas, but there are 15 circumstances in which you are going to be given a yibum opportunity, but you cannot take advantage of the yibum opportunity, A, because she's an erva to you outside of Eishasach, or B, because there's no mitzvah of yibum. When is there no mitzvah of yibum? When it's Eishas Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo. She was the wife of your brother, but you and that brother were never in this world together. Eishas Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo, so there is no mitzvah of yibum, so that means that we have Eishasach with no mitzvah of yibum. It's called an erva. You can't, and obviously under those circumstances, you can't do the mitzvah of yibum. What's an example of Eishas Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo? That's where we pick it up now with the second parak of the Masechta. Ketzad Eishas Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo. Shnei Achim U'meis Echad Mehem. So here's the story. We had two brothers. One of them died. V'nolad Lem Ach. Now, after the death of the brother, now let's go in order over here. Reuven, Shimon, Levi. Okay, so we right now have Reuven and Shimon. Reuven died, leaving his wife as a widow. Shimon, before he does Yibum, now Levi is born. So this is, and let's just really get this terminology well. This is Nolad ve'achakach Yavam. So the first Levi's born, and then Shimon does Yibum. So Echemehem v'Nolad lam ach ve'achakach Yibem Hasheni es Eishes Achiv, and then afterwards Shimon does Yibum Umeis, and then Shimon dies Harishona. So now Shimon died leaving two wives, meaning the one that he did Yibum with, and he also had another wife as well. So Harishona Yotza Mishum Eishes Achiv Shalo Yaba Olamo V'Yashneh Mishum Tzarasa. So now the wife that was previously married to Reuven, so what is she in relationship to Levi? Eishes Achiv Shalo Yaba Olamo. She was the wife of Reuven, but Levi and Reuven were never in this world together. So now that's called Eishes Achiv Shalo B'makom Yibum, and therefore it's an Erva. Now what about the other widow of Shimon? She's a Tzara, a co-wife to an Erva. Okay, so a big part of the first parak of the Masechta, the co-wife of an Erva, is also an Erva. Now, let's say that what Shimon did is Maimer. So he did that Kiddushe de Rabbanan to Reuven's widow, and then he dies. So now, Shnia Choleses Velo Misyabemes, as far as the second wife is concerned, meaning the other, the co-wife. So you do Chalitza, you don't do Yibum. We're going to come back, we're going to discuss that. Yeah, correct. So we're going to come back and we're going to discuss it in more details later on. For right now, we're going to be focusing on the first half of the Mishnah. Amar Rav Nachman, man didni rishon alo mishtabish, man didni shnia alo mishtabish. Now, when Shimon died, so everyone, you have the case down. The case you have to know really well, but it's a simple case. So Reuven married a woman. Reuven dies. Now, before Shimon does anything, Levi's born, and then Shimon does Yibum. Then Shimon dies. Shimon living two widows now. In other words, the one he did Yibum with plus another wife that he married. And now with Levi looking at these two candidates for Yibum, so one of them is Eishes Achiv Shalo Yaba Olamo, and the other one Sarah. That's the case. Now in the Mishnah it says that when Shimon dies, so what's going to happen to his two wives, the Rishona Vishnia? Who's the first and who's the second? One of them was Eishes Reuven. And the other one, who is now Eishes Shimon, and the other one, but let's call her, just for purposes of clarity, let's call her the Yavama. And the other one was just simply the wife of Shimon, who also, by the way, is a Yavama candidate for Levi, but again, Levi can't do either, because the original, that's Eishes Achiv Shalo Yaba Olamo, and the second one is the Tzara. So, when the Mishnah said Rishona Vishnia, which of the wives of Shimon is Rishona? Which of the wives of Shimon is Shnia? It really doesn't matter. Meaning, when all said and done, they're both going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Yibum for the reasons we just explained. But just for the purposes of giving good pshat in the Mishnah, who's first and who's on second?
I don't know.
What difference does it make when he makes the Yibum, first one?
We're going to discuss that in much greater detail coming up. So Amar Rav Nachman, man didni Rishona lo Mishabish, man didni Shnia lo Mishabish, man didni Rishona. So the one who says Rishona lo Mishabish, my Rishona lo Nefila. In other words, the first one that became a candidate for Yibum. So Uman didna Shnia lo Mishabish, my Shnia, Shnia lo Nesuin. And Shnia over here, in other words, we could still describe Eishes Reuven as the second one, because Shnia lo Nesuin, because when she married Shimon, she was second in line, meaning Shimon was already married. And then Shimon did the mitzvah of Yibum with her. So she could also be described as Shnia, the second. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Did it have to go like that? Of course it didn't have to go like that. Milos ginen diyavim v'achar kach kanas. You know, from Shimon's perspective, the case easily could have been, Reuven died, Levi was born, Shimon did Yibum with her, and then he married a second wife. Could have been. So in other words, you think that she could be described as Shnia because she came in second to Shimon's life. Not necessarily. So the Gemara says, Elamai Shnia, Shnia ben Nisuin. Okay. But you know what? She still could be called second. You know why? It's her second marriage. Okay. Anyway, so you could describe this woman as either being the first or being the second. It could work either way. Now, Eishes Achiv Shalo Yaba Olamo Heichek Siva. Okay. So here we go. We've been waiting a long time for this. In other words, ever since we were introduced to this idea back in the first parak. But now, Meheichi Teisi. How do I know that there is no mitzvah of Yibum? Just because Reuben and Levi were not in the world together in the same. They didn't share this planet together, and therefore there's no mitzvah of Yibum. How do we know that? Now, if you remember Rashi on the Rashi when we first introduced this idea, so he gave us an idea, but the Gemara over here is going to be discussing it in detail. This is the daf. I'm reviewed on Marav, I'm a Kra, ki Yeshua Achim Yachdav. The pasuk in the beginning of the Parsha of Yibam says that when brothers are together, Shaisa lam yishiv achas ba'olam, pralei shesach shalai yabalamo. So one drasha is that they were together. Okay, in other words, simple pshat in the pasuk. They were together in this world. Yachdav miyuchad menachala, yachdav means that they also have to be eligible for the same inheritance. Prat la'achiv min ha'aim, which means that maternal brothers are not going to be receiving the same inheritance. Inheritance, Yerusha obviously is coming through the father. If you have brothers, but they're only maternal brothers, they're sharing the same mother, but they're not sharing the same father. So under those circumstances, their Yerusha is not the same. If their Yerusha is not the same, and it's not coming from the same source, they are not eligible for the mitzvah of Yibum. Rabba Amar Achim and Av Yalev Achvach B'mine Yaakov. Okay, so it's to the question of how do I know that in order to be eligible for the mitzvah of Yibum, you have to be on the same earth together? So we have a drasha, Ki Yeshva Achim Yachtav. Then on top of that, we also now just learn another halacha, which is that in order to for there to be a mitzvah of Yibum, you have to be paternal brothers and not maternal brothers. Now it doesn't have to be, it does not have to be that you have to share both same mother, same father, but the key for the mitzvah of Yibum is that you must share the same father. The Gemara, how did the Gemara know that? So the Gemara darshened it out from the pasuk of Yachdav, which means miyuchadim benachala. That's one way to say it. The Gemara has a different way to say it. Rabba Amar Achim Mina Av Yalef Achva Achva Mina Yaakov. And by the way, this is what Rashi quoted at the beginning of the Masechta. So we're learning it out from Bnei Yaakov. So the 12 Shvatim, they shared all shared the same father. They did not share the same mother. So the Gemara says that is a second possible limud. So the Gemara gave us two possible limudim of how we know the mitzvah of Yibam is only for shared father, but not shared mother. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. I have the word achiv in the Parsha of Yibum. I also find it by the Bnei Yaakov. The Gemara says, why don't we do the following? Do you know where we also have the word achim mentioned, achva mentioned? We have it in Arayos. Now, in Arayos, when it comes to the prohibition of siblings being with one another, there it does not matter whether they are paternal siblings, maternal siblings, meaning if brother and sister are sharing, let's say, a father, if brother and sister are sharing just a mother, they are erva to one another. So in the Parsha of Arayos, so we're not limiting the sibling relationship to just a shared father. It would include even just a shared mother. So why not make the Gzeres Shava to that destination? So danem achim achim ein danem achim achecha. So here the Gemara says it's a better Gzeres Shava because it's a better word match. So the Gemara says, really, my nafka mina? Now hopefully we are all familiar with this. The Gemara cites this question, I think a minion of times in all of Shas, but anyway, my nafkamina, why do you care? Hatanin debe Rabbi Yishmael, v'shavakona v'akon, zu shiva, zu ibia, without going through the gzereshav inside, but basically a gzereshav can be created, even if the word's not the same, but as long as that is the same meaning, that can also create a gzereshav. So the Gemara gives the answer, this is a traditional answer of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, look, if I have a choice, so what we're going to do is that we're going to go to something which has a better word match. Since the Achim of Yibum is a better match to the Achim of Bnei Yaakov, so that's why we're going to go into that direction. Again, a question which I know I've asked in the past, but I'll reset the question. And that is, if we're talking about Gzeres Shava, we're talking about a bona fide Gzeres Shava. So how do you make Gzeres Shava? The answer is you don't. You don't make Gzeres Shava. The Gzeres Shava is a tradition that you have from your Rebbeim. So over here, how does the Gemara entertain? You know, instead of the Gzeres Shava taking us to that destination, why don't we go to that destination? How does that conversation even work? In other words, Gzeres Shava is a tradition. So how do we give ourselves options? Okay, what I'm asking is a profound question. I myself don't have a prepared answer.
It's a tradition of Achdus.
Okay, I've heard answers similar to that. V'leiliv achva achva milo. So the Gemara says, okay, but I do have another pasuk that speaks about siblings, about brotherhood, and that's, of course, the relationship between Avram and Lot. Now, they weren't actual brothers. It was uncle-nephew. But dichsiv, kianashim achim anachnu. But meanwhile, when describing their relationship, they are anashim achim. And there you have the perfect word. You have achim. So, and now if we were to go to Avram Lot, so that would be funny. Meaning then it would come out, when do I do the mitzvah of Yibum? When you're uncle nephew. Okay. But we do have the word achim over there. So the Gemara says, Mistabrim b'nei Yaakov, havalei lemelef, mishum de mafnei. Now, the Gzeir Shav is better by b'nei Yaakov, because there the word is extraneous. Because they could have just left out the word achim altogether. They could have just simply said that we are 12 avadecha, all sharing the same father. And then we would have figured out pretty easily that that means they're brothers. Uksiv achim. And meanwhile, the Torah goes out of its way to say the word achim. So we all know, once the Torah writes a word that's extraneous, oh, that makes for a magnificent gzeir shava. Shema min alaf nuyei. Okay, so here we go. We have just learned together that in order to qualify for the mitzvah of Yibum, you have to be brothers, but brothers sharing the same father. How do I know that? So we have not one, but two separate drashas that get us to that point. One drasha is Yachdav, Miuchad Menachla. A second drasha, the Gzeir Shava, that takes us to the Bnei Yaakov. Okay, and they're both necessary? The Gemara says yes. So if I would have said just Achim, maybe we would have gone to Lot. And the Gemara says, and I know what you're thinking. Well, the one by Yaakov is better because it was superfluous. The Gemara says, nah, the one by Lot is also superfluous. If they could have just simply said that we're Re'im, we're close, we're friends, we're intimate. But instead the Torah used the word Achim, so lafnuye. So kasar echmani yachdav amiyuchad manachla. So the yachdav is there to clarify and say, no, don't take the word achim and don't go to the relationship of Lot Avraham. It goes to the brothers. Why? Because we also know that they have to be sharing the same inheritance source, which means that they share the same father. So the Gemara says, now, why does it say the word yachdav? Because without that, I would have thought that in order for there to be the mitzvah of Yibum, it is not sufficient to share the same father, but you, the siblings, have to be sharing the same father and the same mother. The Gemara says, really? I would have thought that. Yibum Gemara says, why would I have thought that? Meaning, do you know a halacha? We're going to learn this halacha together later on. And that is that when you do the mitzvah of Yibum, so it's a double award to the Yavam. Number one, you get your brother's wife. Number two, you get your entire brother's estate. Okay. And we'll talk about this later in the Masechta as well. So, and so the Gemara says, so why would we have entertained that in order for that to happen, you have to have both a shared mother and father? So the Gemara says, yeah. It's the Rechsaka Dachamin, the whole Vechidashu Dekem, Mishtari Erva Gabe, Ema, Dimiachte, Ba'ava, Ema Tzricha. Gemara says, yeah, we still would have had a Havamina. Why? Because consider what's happening. As we discussed in state one of the Masechta, Yibum allows you to marry an Erva. She's Eishes Ach. So I would have made the argument, says the Gemara, we need a strong relationship in order to override the Isser of Eishes Ach. When we say strong relationship, so maybe what we mean by that is shared father and mother. Then and only then do we have enough of a relationship where we can override the Isser of Eishes Ach. So that's the Havamina, and the Maskana is no. Yachdav is coming to tell me that no, it just all you need is a shared Nachla. Shared Nachla, so that means to say that just shared father, not you don't need father and mother. Okay, Adkan, we're going to stop over here. Let's quickly recap. Beginning of today's daf, a couple of drushas from Psukim and Eicha. Okay, a little bit random, but we started with one pasuk, and then we just darshan into a collection of other psukim. The first big sugya of today, starting on the bottom of Tetzayin Amud Beis, taking us through the end of the perek, is yichus. Right, there are certain communities where we have a suspicion, we have a feeling that they were populated by the Aseret HaShvatim. displaced from Eretz Yisrael during Bais Rishon, during the Tkufa of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, so and taken to other places, and they certainly had a sense. This is clear from the Gemara today. They, the Amoraim, certainly had a sense of where they went and where they were taken to. So now when you have these communities that were populated by the Aseret HaShvatim, so do we have to now worry about their yichus? Your options are basically that they are mamzerim, meaning they're Jews and they're mamzerim, or they're non-Jews altogether. On that major machlokus, Amoraim, in the course of today's daf, the Shita of Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Asi is that they're Jews. Now, Jews, by the way, but with defects, meaning that we're going to have to assume that they are they're Jews and they're mamzerim as well. In other words, he took the shitas of Rav Asi, collected it together with Rav Yochanan, the Kul and Lipsul, and in other words, then the fact that they're Jewish actually creates more of a problem than it does a solution. Because again, the way I said it earlier today, it's intermarriage and then intramarriage. Okay, and then you that's how you result in them being Jews and also them being and them being mamzerim as well. Shmuel totally disagrees. On Yizayin Amad Alev, the Gemara presents us to the Sheet of Shmuel, and Shmuel says no. In other words, obviously the 10 northern tribes were displaced, and they were sent out to different locations. That part, of course, is historical fact. However, according to Shmuel, they did not result in having future Jewish generations. Why not? So the Gemara says it. In other words, on our own, on my own, you have to have a Masorah to say something like this. Shmuel says that only the men propagated. The women of the Aseret HaShvatim simply did not propagate. Okay, there's a number of ways of how you could say it, but anyway, that's Shmuel's Masorah, which means, of course, that we follow matrilineal descent, and since the Jewish women of that generation did not have progeny, so therefore there are no Jews of the Aseret HaShvatim. That is the Shita of Shmuel. And then the Gemara finished off the first parak with a discussion of people who do not have yichus, where do they go? So there are certain communities that they go to. Harpanya was branded and labeled as basically the town of rejects. In other words, people who do not have yichus. Okay, sensitive topic, obviously, but that's right. I'm not here to sugarcoat the Gemara. Hadron l'chamesh esrei nashim, and that's the end of the first parak of the Masechta. And then this morning we started the second parak of the Masechta, in which we opened up with Eishes Achiv Shelo Yehi Ba'olamo. What's the case of Eishes Achiv Shelo Yehi Ba'olamo? So the Mishnah over here lays down the fundamental, the foundational case in which Reuven dies is before Shimon did the mitzvah of Yibum with his widow, Levi was born, then Shimon does Yibum, then Shimon dies, Levi vis-a-vis the widow is now Eishes Achiv Shelo Yehi Ba'olamo, and therefore it's an Eishes Ach without the benefit of the mitzvah of Yibum, and therefore he can't do the mitzvah of Yibum. Not only is she going to be exempt, but if she's sharing a co-wife, and if she was married to Shimon, sharing another wife, she also is going to be exempt as well because of Saras Erva. Good. That's the Mishnah. The Mishnah also introduced us to Maimer, but I'm glossing that over because we're going to come back to that and discuss that better in a future daf. Then, the two discussions we had in the Gemara today, one's a detail, small detail, in terms of when we're describing the two widows of Shimon. So, the one married to Reuven, was she the Rishona or was she the Shnia? It could go either way. In other words, you could describe her as Rishon, you could describe her as Shnia. And then the other discussion, which is the big discussion of Amud Beis of today's daf, how do I know that Eishes Achiv Shelo Yehi Ba'olamo is going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Yibum? And couple that with, how do I know that in order for there to be a mitzvah of Yibum, it must be a shared father? And the mother is inconsequential regarding the mitzvah of Yibum. So but they have to have a shared father. How do I know that? So the Gemara gives over our sources. There actually are two sources. And then the Gemara gives a trichusa. Why I need these two sources. Adkan.